Hey, everybody. Today, observational humor meets existential contemplation. Buckle up, because today we're venturing into the artistic mind of a man who's mastered the art of storytelling through the unexpected. Brad Forenza is the brilliant mastermind behind the compelling audio drama Around the Sun. It's a transformation of his stage plays that took the limitations of the pandemic and spun them into a new kind of magic. His work extends beyond the traditional platforms for which they were initially designed, from experimental theater programs to educational initiatives that reshape how we perceive the world. Brad doesn't just exist in his creative universe, he invents new ones. So let's dive in and discover how boundaries can be the ultimate playground. And I want to learn something from Brad today. So here we go. Brad, I am so excited that you are here today and we get to talk about your awesome new projects. Everybody out there, check out our new newsletter. It's called A Funny Way of Looking.News. You'll love that. How are you, Brad?
I'm doing well, Michael J. Thank you for having me on. And thanks to Caden and your team for getting me on. And I'll save the next one for a special shout out.
I want to ask you anyway, who do you want to do a shout out to?
I want to do a shout out to our mutual friend and prior guest on A Funny Way of Looking, Dwayne Scott Cerny, author of Selling Dead People's Things and Vintage Confidential.
I love Dwayne because, yeah, he has sent us like amazing guests, including you. And it's just like fun to do. So we need more drag queens, we need more authors, we need more everything. So,
well, hopefully I live up to the expectation of amazing.
I think that you will. And from what I've already seen, you already have. I want to talk about how you come up with your creative ideas and what you did. Let's start before pandemic, right?
Okay.
Before pandemic, what was your creative journey? Like, what did you do when you wanted to do a new project?
Well, I'll just start by saying I tend to see creativity in everything. For some people, it might be fitness or fixing old cars, automobiles, etc. For me, creativity and the creative process is more in the artistic realm. Yeah. And I've always been a creative. I don't know that I could tell you when I actually started creating things, but I remember as a kid writing a series of Indiana Mouse books in air quotes for those who are listening as opposed to watching. I was in the AV club by the time high school rolled around, coaxing my friends and family to do both original scripted projects, but also recreations of things like The Graduate. And then that just evolved through time.
Do you remember like the very first thing that you ever did? Like you go like, I'm going to do this. And you were like kind of pumped or maybe scared to do it. What was the first thing you did when you were a kid?
First thing I did was probably performing in front of my family.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then first thing I did in a public space was an independent film in, 2017 or so. Mm-hmm. So not terribly long ago, but with respect to all the projects, including Around the Sun that have come since, it seems like a bit ago. Plus it's before the pandemic. So everything pre-pandemic feels like old world at this point.
So here's the next question I have for you. And that is like when the pandemic hit,
mm-hmm.
How did it affect you? Now, was because when we all had to stay inside, I was all like, hey, I don't mind that at all because I'm already in here. What about you?
Yeah, I think at first I had the same reaction as you did, Michael J. I'm not intimidated by having to look inward, so to speak. The quiet doesn't scare me, but I'm just extroverted enough for, after a few months pass, I'm ready to get going again. I'm ready to start engaging with other people, putting on a show, working together in a classroom space. And you can't do that in the context of those earlier days of pandemic. So after the first couple months passed and my desire to look inward and reset had kind of like, all right, start the car here. Let's go. After some of those feelings had melted away, I was ready to go again by summer 2020.
I totally feel you, because I was literally sitting in my apartment one night, and it's like, you know what? I'm just going to turn on the camera and start talking to people on Facebook. And that's literally where everything started.
Like, yeah.
For you too?
Totally for me too. And Around the Sun, the first season, as you referenced, the episodes had already been produced more or less as 10-minute plays in the 10-minute play circuit. And then that summer, when I want to start being creative again with people and collaborate with people in communion with fellow humans, that enabled me to just kind of repurpose those plays and reformat those formerly staged plays as listen-only audio dramas, modern-day radio plays.
How did you do it? Did you just come up with and just call everyone up for a reading and say, hey, let's do a reading and just get one going? What did you do?
Great question. And I think since those pieces in season one had been disproportionately tested for, gosh, probably about 10 years leading up to the pandemic, I didn't really feel the need to have everybody sit in a remote recording session just reading them aloud, because I had heard most of them so many times. Now, there were a couple that I scripted for this audio drama medium, and those pieces I wanted to vet with small groups of people just to make sure if they were going to be heard in a big way, if those episodes were going to be produced alongside the episodes that had been vetted for so many years. I wanted them to hold their weight, and they did. And since it's a professional project, Michael J., it takes time to get SAG-AFTRA to offer an agreement, especially in those earlier COVID days and the era of lockdown and social distancing. They wanted to make sure that their professional actors were going to be protected and weren't going to be in a physical space. All of this sounds kind of old hat now as I'm sharing this with you in 2023. But back in summer 2020, we didn't start recording in summer 2020. I just started getting pre-production moved along with the Professional Actors Union. So it probably wasn't until 2021 when we started recording after SAG-AFTRA signed off on the process.
Wow. So you have the three seasons of Around the Sun now, right?
Yes. And three seasons, season three, which is coming out this fall, just like season two, which was released last fall, those are produced exclusively for this audio drama landscape. So I've been on a year-long clock of one-third pre-production, one-third production, and then one-third this phase, which is distribution and getting it out to people to hear for free.
I think this is awesome. Should we? I kind of want to like hit up the trailer and let people see like what's going on, if we can do that. Or do you want to talk about season one?
I would be honored. And it's your show, Michael J. So
let's listen.
Season three trailer out today.
Around the Sun.
Merry Christmas!
It's all just as I remember.
This will be our third season of original scripted content created for you!
It's tradition!
What have you been doing this whole time?
We're set in tundra this year.
Watch out for the icy patches!
I said I was sorry!
With human connections all in the same family.
Consider it a metaphor.
He always did love holidays.
But will the absence of a matriarch unite or divide?
I'm Francois Clemens.
I'm Robert Finaro.
I'm Judy Gold.
I'm Wilson Jermaine Heredia.
I'm Terry Hu.
I'm Katie McLean.
I'm Estelle Parsons.
I'm Jay Rodriguez.
I'm still Brad Forenza. Join us for season three of Around the Sun.
Out today.
I love that. It's a world premiere.
Yes, our trailer drops today, with future episodes starting to drop in October and continuing throughout the fall into the first month of 2024.
How much of that cast that we just heard in the trailer have you worked with, like, on all three seasons, or is it changing up? How does that work?
So every season has a new cast, and most of our episodes are self-contained in that one of your fabulous listeners, Michael J., can drop in on an episode that's already out there from season one or from season two, and they can enjoy the episode for what it is in a self-contained kind of way. Or if they want to listen across the full season or two seasons, they can enjoy every individual independent episode wrapped in some broader themes, themes that you mentioned, existentialism, human relationships, made and missed for better and worse. And season three is a mini series. So to answer your question, it's a new cast. And season three, while the episodes can still be appreciated in a one-off kind of way, I've really taken great pains to have some connective tissue from episode to episode. But you're not missing much if you just want to tune in to hear your favorite stars in episode three, let's say. You would not be lost for what's going on if you hadn't listened to episodes one or two. Just like if you're dropping in on a sitcom, they're meant to be appreciated individually, but if you're a fan of a given show, you'll experience character development in a deeper way if you listen across episodes. So I'm very excited.
How do you come up with the themes of each of the shows? In other words, do you walk around and you see somebody with gum stuck on their shoe and you make an episode about it? Or
pretty much.
What is it? Like
pretty much that. I'll think back to season one. So again, they're all self-contained episodes, but they all in season one take place in New York City. And as I speak with you this morning, New York City's over there. That's my home city of reference and always has been. So I love New York. Season one is very much a Valentine to New York and some of my favorite places. We were talking just before we got rolling here about an episode titled The Museum. It's season one.
That was
one,
a fantastic episode, by the way.
Episode 8, thank you. And it's the singular episode to live in audio-video form. All the episodes are radio dramas / audio dramas, but Vincent Pastore, who I get to co-star opposite in season one, episode 8, The Museum, he wanted to make some of these visuals come to life. And even though it was lockdown, through remote technology and some archival photos, we were able to bring the museum to life in that episode.
Yeah.
And it lives in audio video form.
It was great. I mean, it's like, it is literally like a little tear up thing. So for all you guys out there listening, and it's like, you got this, the father thing, and you want to figure out maybe some answers to stuff. I thought it was brilliant. Thank you for that.
Thank you. And that means a lot. Whenever people tell me that an episode touched them or reached them at the personal level, helped them feel like their experience was normalized, that is, as a writer, a huge, 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 huge compliment. And if the arts are meant to kind of mirror reality, if we're meant to see ourselves in artistic representations, then I'm doing my job. Then we're all doing our job. And like I said, I happen to be in that episode of season one. That's the only episode I'm in season one. But for the most part, I try and keep myself out of things. Usually I'm in one episode a season.
What are you trying to teach everyone or get across with, you know, Around the Sun? What is your vision, if you could get that Vulcan mind meld with everyone and say, this is what I want, what is it?
Well, going back to season one and those days of social distancing and are we all going to die tomorrow? And there was a lot of loss. Part of the experience was selfishly to connect with the people that I was working with. And then professionally to help raise the creative profile of these formerly 10-minute plays that I had written and to make them live a little bit more permanently in the universe. So I guess my intention was twofold back during season one. On one hand, to just be with people. My extroverted side needed to connect with like-minded individuals and create. And then on the other hand, with respect to the professionalization of the work, it helps that someone like Vincent Pastore, someone like Maureen Van Zandt, et cetera, will give legs to these pieces. And now they're out there for everyone to enjoy. And per the SAG-AFTRA agreement that this project is signed to, they're available for everyone to enjoy free of charge.
So you brought up something there that is interesting to me, and that is when you do a play, when you do something live, it happens, it's gone, right?
Yeah.
And now you've got things that are permanent. I guess that's the way to look at it. Like, how does that affect your mindset? How do you think about that now that you've got stuff that's permanent and it's out there people can enjoy?
I'm sort of still pinching myself that it's now going into season 3 of Around the Sun. And I'm so pleased with the work. I'm really, really proud of it. And when I start to feel as a writer, so even if I'm only in one episode or two per season, I do write all of the episodes and I do produce all of the episodes. When I start to feel as a writer that I've run out of things to say, that I'm hacking it, if I ever start to feel that way about this project, that's when I might have to put the project on pause, because I don't want to cheapen what the experience has been for me and by extension, what I hope the experience is for the listener. I think, Michael J., it's a solid project.
It's a completely solid project. What is like one of the episodes that you look at and you go, this one means more to me than everything else because it's personal. Is there something like that that you look at and you go, like, this is the one, I love this?
Well, the one that comes right after the museum in season 1. So season 1, the museum, that's me and Vincent Pastore. And Vincent Pastore is a mentor and he cared enough to put this on film. He wanted to do that for the project because he believed in the project. And moments like that, you know, I'll never forget. It means the world to me. The episode that follows the museum is called Marathon, and it's effectively a solo performance performed by Dr. Francois Clemens, who is best known as playing Officer Clemens on 25 seasons of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. But of course, no one's just one thing. Dr. Clemens is also a Grammy winner for a recording of Porgy and Bess. And the day that Dr. Clemens recorded his piece, ironically, my dad had just died. And if I say all this with a painted face, it's only to get through this conversation, Michael J., but the symmetry of what I was asking Dr. Clemens to do, what I was asking him to record, paired against my dad's recent passing that summer, he was meant to come into my life at that moment. And strangely, the way these relationships work, we had been planning to record for weeks, if not months, before the actual recording date. And I was able to be there for my dad when he left this plane. And I had a great relationship with my dad. His birthday's coming up. He heard some of the rough cuts of episodes that had already been in the bag, and he just loved it. But Dr. Clemens is a very spiritual individual. And Dr. Clemens is a singer. So alongside his solo performance of words that I had written, he also wanted to record some songs that were in the public domain. And after he had recorded two that he was partial to, it just popped into my head that maybe he would be open to recording a third. I tend to think that things come in threes anyway.
Yep.
And it was a song that, strangely, I had sung with my dad in the hospital in one of our, you know, these are private moments, so I'm a little reticent to put them out there, but a song that we had been singing, a song that he loved, Michael Row the Boat Ashore. And Dr. Clemens recorded that as a tribute to my dad, and that lives very strongly both in his episode from season one, which is titled Marathon, and also strongly in my muscle memory.
I understand about the father and things, so we'll both move on to it so we don't have to keep the painted faces, because otherwise I'll start to tear up also.
And there's nothing wrong with crying. I want to give your listeners reason to listen to this podcast as opposed to, oh boy, that sounds like a real knee slapper.
They'll listen because we're both emoting and we're both giving truth. So how about that?
I love it. And to continue an answer based on a question you asked a few minutes ago, Dr. Clemens is the singular cast member to appear. He was in season one, as I just shared, and now he's going to appear for us again in season three, singing again, because he's just got such a rich voice and he's not afraid to share it.
Without giving anything away, like, is there a big surprise that you're waiting for? Everyone's going to go like, I'm waiting for that episode right there, because that's killer.
Well, I'll stick with Dr. Clemens and say this is a first for me. He's recorded a song that I wrote, and, you know, don't want to give too much away, but that's going to cap out our season three, which is going to be released throughout fall 2023. I've written songs have been recorded before. I'm very proud of every project that my name is attached to. And it's new for a Grammy winner to record something that I've written in this project that's now 3 years strong. And really, I had to invite him back, yes, because he has such a rich voice and he's so generous of time and spirit. But also, you can imagine how focused I was, which is not very, the couple days or the week after my dad had passed, back when he and I initially recorded season one.
I think that what you are doing is fantastic. It's just that people who do stuff that's creative all the time and they're actually enjoying their lives, they're making money at it, they're helping other people. I love that expression in the world. You know what I'm saying? It's just, that's it for me.
I do too. So is the implication I'm supposed to be making money from this?
I hope. I'm not making money from this yet. So if you are, you're ahead of me.
And I'm teasing, of course, but, you know, it's a true labor of love. And I'm to say it's payment enough is both a cliche, but there's truth in cliches. So it's a cliche and it's true. It's a labor of love.
Let's do something. I want people to learn even more about you. Your projects are amazing. I want them to learn, dig into you. So we're going to play a little game of this or that.
Okay.
I'm going to give you two questions, and you can choose one or the other, but you cannot choose neither or both.
Can't be wishy-washy.
And if you have to explain something, you can. I've already asked you the super, super easy tea or coffee, and you said?
I said coffee.
You did.
And I showed you my coffee.
You did. And let's go a little deeper into who is Brad Forenza right now. Just who is he? Morning writing sessions or late night brainstorming?
Morning writing sessions.
Okay.
A night owl, but morning writing sessions.
Nice. Do you get up writing or do you get up meditating or do you get up and like walk around like the rest of
us? I get up and start work.
Nice. How about stand-up comedy or sit-down interview?
Gosh, these are great questions. Stand-up comedy.
Okay. How about digital notes or handwritten analog journal?
Handwritten analog notes.
Tell people about that because I'm right with you on that. I love writing on
handwritten paper. Analog notes. And I was just having this conversation earlier today around the capacity of handwritten notes to live longer in the muscle memory, and for someone who might be learning something, let's say in a classroom space, a traditional classroom space, that tactile act of writing can help content live a bit more, a bit more permanently in the muscle memory.
I agree with you 1,000% on that. And there's other things. Just the doodles are part of the creativity. And you can't do that visually.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all out there. How about city skyline or nature for inspiration?
These are great questions. Nature for inspiration.
Okay. How about comedy shows or philosophy books?
Comedy shows.
Okay. Solo project or collaborative effort?
Collaborative effort.
Okay. And you're around the sun. It's definitely, you write them, but it comes together. How do you look at that? Is it collaborative or is it solo?
Well, I often say if I'm breaking the year up, the production year into thirds, that pre-production, that first phase, that is totally solitary and siloed and independent and introverted. It's me and me alone. And then I start sharing it, reading with friends. And then when we move into production, when everything is finessed after the SAG-AFTRA agreement has been approved, then that's a collaborative effort. So actors who are professional, they come into the project with their own interpretation of a role. They contribute something unique to a role based on their own lived experience, et cetera, et cetera. So it's very collaborative. So, and then
on that thing right there, just when they come in and they change what you've written, how much of a stickler are you of, no, I want it the way I did it, or letting them do it the way they want to do it?
I love when they personalize it and thinking of the 30 plus people who are part of the cast at this point, no one has changed content or substance without having a conversation about that. But, you know, wordsmithing, like if Bruce Valanche, an Emmy-winning writer, and Judy Gold, an Emmy-winning writer as well, if they want to change stuff to make it punchier or more colorful, I encourage that. And by the way, both of them did. Bruce was part of season 2. He plays both a officer at Area 51, and then in a second episode, he plays a stargazer. Judy Gold plays a mother going through menopause in the upcoming season 3, and if both of them want to change a line or two, have at it. Okay. That's a badge of honor.
Awesome. Next question. How about pre-planned script or improv? I know you write the scripts.
Oh, gosh. Yeah. Well, pre-planned script. Pre-planned script. Try saying that 5 times fast.
I'm surprised I got through it the first time.
Yeah. I think there's something really cool about improv as a medium for storytelling and theater experiences. It's not my wheelhouse, and yet I really appreciate the people who can do it and do it well. Tell a story that's completely without a safety net. And yet what I love most about improv and what I do gravitate to and connect to is the notion of accepting another person's reality. Yes, and validating someone else's experience. I think that's just such a cool through line of improvisational theater. And also I try to incorporate it in all aspects of life. But if you're asking me as a creative and potentially as an actor, which I prefer, a script or to be completely without a net, I'll go for a script.
All right. We'll have another entire show on Yes, But. No, Yes, And, I think, is one of the most brilliant things that's been invented.
I agree. And I think it's done a great job in a welcome way of infiltrating other realms of life that are not theater. If one were to think about the social sciences or what a counseling therapeutic relationship might be like, just accepting another person's reality. Accepting a person's reality, meeting them where they're at, is a really useful skill.
Here's one for you. How about physical stage or virtual platform?
Physical stage.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
Have you gotten back to it already? Are doing stuff physical stage? What are you doing?
I have gotten back to it, and yeah, I have gotten back to it, and I'm also still straddling the virtual space as well. Just okay. With Mr. Pastor, we just did a reading that was in the virtual space. We did two of them in the last year, but I am actively getting back into live performance as well.
That's awesome. How about, let's talk about influence. Influence from comedy legends or from philosophical thinkers?
Oh, comedy legends and philosophical thinkers. That's interesting that implicitly we're equating them both, because I just went to the National Comedy Museum in Jamestown, New York, and they house George Carlin's career archives. They will soon house Joan Rivers's career archives. And yeah, these are philosophers of our time.
That is a very good point. You know, I didn't realize just how brilliant Carlin was when he was like popular. And I go back and listen now because it pops up in my feeds wherever. Mm-hmm. And dude was right on with his thinking, I believe anyway.
Yeah.
So
stuff. Cool. What do? We work so we can, you know, we'll never do it justice, but I know he has a whole bit on stuff. And even if we might not consider that
topical
philosophy, it is kind of, you know, there's all these conversations about being mindful, about living minimally, being a minimalist. And I think there's some merit to those seeds he planted back when.
Absolutely. His stuff monologue is brilliant.
Yeah.
How about creative freedom with financial constraints or financial freedom with creative constraints?
Well, isn't this the conundrum, the creative's conundrum?
Yes.
I think I have to, if I'm thinking as someone who does not have to pay city rents, I'm going with the former, which is creative freedom with financial constraints.
Okay.
And just like I might straddle introverted and extroverted realms, I think I also straddle emotional versus logical realms. Mm-hmm. And, you know, what can I say, Michael J? I like having dessert every once in a while. So I'm not trying to give you a wishy-washy answer, just keeping it real.
We're just learning who Brad is. That's all there is to it. Let me ask you this then. How about risky creative choice that fails or safe choice that succeeds?
Risky that fails.
I think risky that fails, you learn a lot more, right?
Risky that fails, you learn a lot more. And also, you can do that if you have a bit of a foundation.
Yeah, yeah. How about affect people through humor or make them think?
Affect people through humor. I think a lot can be normalized, distilled, validated in a non-threatening way through humor.
Okay. Let's get philosophical for a second. How about joy as the ultimate goal or suffering as the ultimate teacher?
Joy is the ultimate goal.
Okay.
And let me do another plug. If your wonderful listeners would like our season 2 finale, which stars Piper Laurie from Carrie and The Hustler and Children of a Lesser God, this whole notion of yin and yang, you know, you won't appreciate the highs that life offers if you haven't been in the valley.
That is so true.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's so true. You need them both, without a doubt. Yeah.
I just was listening to something the other day wherein someone, I don't remember who it was, but this was an interview, and someone was saying just they didn't realize they were in the fog until they were out of it. But also they wouldn't have realized that they were out of it if not for the experience of having been in it.
100%. How is art more for the artist or for the audience?
Oh, gosh. I can't be wishy-washy, so I'll say it starts for the artist.
Okay. Artist for the artist.
And then I'm still not being wishy-washy. I answered the question. I stand by my response. But the audience is only hearing a fraction of what the artist is creating, of what the writer, the composer is generating. So perhaps what sees the light of day is what's relatable, is where the connective tissue lives between artist and audience.
Okay. Okay. This next one, I originally wrote this about comedy, but I think I may change it to emotion to escape reality or to confront it. Now let's stick with comedy. Comedy to escape reality or to confront it.
Ah, to confront it.
Okay. How do you feel that comes across in like all your work?
In all my work? Let's see. I'm now trying to think for the funniest piece. Maureen Van Zandt and Joanna Bonaro in season one have a piece that they star in titled Wall Street. And on the surface, it's an episode about one neighbor wanting the other neighbor to get rid of, cut down a family pet. But then below that funny dynamic is a story about empty nest syndrome and feeling neglected by one's partner.
Wow.
So I think that, you know, the best comedy is tragedy and the best tragedy is comedy.
Okay, cool. I got two more for you.
Okay.
Constantly evolve your style or stick to what you've known?
Constantly evolve.
Okay.
In all realms of life.
Excellent. Last one. Do you create more for legacy or for the moment?
For the moment.
Yeah?
For the moment.
What do you think your legacy will be?
I don't know. I don't know. I mean, I guess it's nice to know that Around the Sun is out there and it will proceed me. But at the same time, that's not why I created it. What do I want my legacy to be? I hope that people would remember me as a kind person. I hope they would remember me as someone who was relatable, a good friend, a good collaborator.
Yeah, I think those are all really good things to have and be. So Brad, I want people to remember you for sure and be able to get in touch with you, watch your work, listen to your work. We've got your aroundthesunpodcast.com. So for everybody who's listening and not watching, that's all one word, aroundthesunpodcast.com. And then you, of course, are up on the interwebs on Instagram and Twitter at Brad Forenza. That's Brad, B-R-A-D, Forenza, F-O-R-E-N-Z-A. And there's also hashtag Around the Sun Podcast. And for your Facebook, which has nothing to do with Around the Sun, it's sort of spelling it out, it is B-V-O-Y-L-S-A. And tell them what it stands for, Brad.
That stands for Best Version of Yourself. That's my production company. And because I do straddle these introverted and extroverted realms, as probably many creatives do, you know, you won't see much going on under my own social media, but you'll see a good deal of content coming out under Best Version of Yourself, B-V-O-Y-L-L-C, our Facebook handle.
Look like Carrie, LLC. No, I'm just saying.
I like that. And sometimes, you know, I'll go out on this note if we're wrapping up, which is that, and this went so quickly. I've loved every minute, and those hard questions, I will be thinking about them for a while. Just, we get to live sometimes through our characters. So piggybacking off of your last question, going back to an earlier question, why do we do what we do? But also this whole introverted, extroverted thing. Imagine dialogue. That's a really powerful notion for me. Having conversations as characters, point, counterpoint, that we may shy away from in real life. I think that's a huge power of storytelling.
Nice. I think you and I are going to have to do some yes and one day.
I'm down.
Thank you for being on the show, Brad. Amazing conversation. I love your work. I told you I love the whole father thing in the museum. I look forward to talking to you again sometime. Thank you.
Thank you, Michael J. Yeah.
Bye, everybody. We'll see you in the future.